G'day everyone, and welcome to this show. And back on the show, we've got Barry Littleton. How you going, Barry?
What's happening, Pete? How's it going?
Good,
So you
mate.
take
You just had me laughing my guts out before we've even started the show, which is good. We got a huge response of you being on the show. Actually, each time you've been on, I've had emails about you, and they're spot on with just how articulate you are. How in depth you go. Some people wanted you to go a bit more in depth into some things, and even you said that even if you've got a backtrack, we can go into what you're referring to in other shows.
Oh, be my pleasure.
But we talk a bit off air, and I wanted to get into and get you back on the show to talk about the time travel aspect of what's going on, some of the technologies involved, and also the charters, which I found very interesting, which basically, as you were referring to the charters as being us in the future coming back, and they sort of come around, I think you're saying every 7 years. And I've had sort of similar stuff happen, and I'd have to say a lot of experiences down the track realize the same thing. That, and it's not saying there's no ETs or interdimensional beings, but it seems to be that some of the things that experiences are interacting with are us in the future coming back. I know that for myself, with some of the information, which I don't know what to believe with Dan Burrish, I don't know him personally, but some of the stuff about the Orions coming back, and then some of us surviving and going to the Pleiades and Orion, and some of us turning in the Greys. Well, I'm not saying the same thing, because I know that some of the beings, from what I've had shown to me by the Elohim, stayed as humans, but they evolved slightly differently. They still look human, and then some of them look like the Greys. And I'm sure there's, I wouldn't even be covering 0.00001% out of 1,000,000,000% of what's going on. But it's just when you said that to me last time we spoke, and the other couple of times you've touched on it, just a light went off in my head, and a lot have spoken about it. So, do you want to go into the charters, what they are, and what your experiences have been with them, and then we can sort of just take it from there.
Sure, no problem at all. By the way, I appreciate that. I actually got a few responses myself, like through Facebook, and made a few new friends, and have gotten some emails and asked some questions that it blew me away. I've been hiding my whole life, my experiences and everything I know, and this has changed things a lot. So I appreciate that from you and everybody.
No, you've got a lot to offer. You've got a lot to offer, and that's why I'm more than happy to put that format out there. And, it totally resonates with all of us that are hearing you that have responded. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot, man. Sorry about that. But anyway, you say you want to go over the charters a little bit. It's interestingly enough. I'll tell you how it started. All right. When I was younger, I'd seen a ship with my mother. All right. And I have a really good memory. All right. But for some reason, I didn't seem to be able to recall this. I used to have this clairvoyant, local clairvoyant, I would see sometimes. And she kept mentioning the ship that I saw with a parent, and that I thought that they were just doing a routine deal, but they were in communication with me, and that's why I couldn't remember it, and they were watching me. And she said, "Your friend gave you something from that ship." And I'm thinking to myself, "What?"
Your mama said
It
that to you.
no, this psychic, this
Oh, so
clairvoyant said, right?
yep.
Yeah, and at this point, I was a lot younger. I was maybe in my late 20s at this point. And I'm like, she was kind of new age like, and I don't care for that much. So I said, "Yeah, right, whatever you say." And one day I'm getting close to the age of 30, and I'm looking, I'm over at my mother's house, at my parents' house. I'm looking at a UFO magazine, actually, a book, and my mother was going by, and she goes, "Oh, that looks like the one we saw." And she pointed to one of the ships on this. That's where I looked at her, and I said, "What?" And she said, "We saw it in the mall that day over there, over the mall, and we watched it for a while, and Peter, I couldn't remember that." You know what I mean? She had to kind of jar my memory a little bit. She's saying, "The memory you have, you can remember what toy I was taking you to get, but you can't remember seeing that, Mr. Star Trek guy." And I was like, "Well, I couldn't at all, And then as I was able to retain this memory a little bit, I could remember seeing the ship and what it looked like now. Okay. But later on, I come to find I had an experience, all right, when I was about the age of 7. I was with my mother again, and she liked to do something that was called junking. All right, she collected antiques. All right, and she was in this some shop, and I'm with her, and a very boring exercise for any child, as you might imagine. But this shop had some odd books in it and some rocks, some different rocks. And I took a liking to one of the rocks in this jar, all right? And as I'm looking at it, this man comes from around the counter, so I thought maybe he worked there, when actually he didn't, all right? He starts talking to me. The first thing he says to me is, "Young man, do you think igneous rocks are metamorphic by nature?" And I said, "Well, yes, but it takes them too long, and that it takes them millions of years, and that's too long." And then he began to ask me a number of geology questions, all right? And he felt like a scientist. He was a Caucasian gentleman, I'd say about maybe 5'8", 5'9", brownish gray hair. Looked like he's pushing 50 at most, all right? But very nice gentleman. He had a good energy about him, and I've talked to him for a long time. And my mother, I was under supervision always. She's just a few feet away, so I wasn't in danger. Does that make sense? Yeah. But he keeps talking to me, all right? Before I leave, he gives me, he says, "I'm going to give you that rock, and I want you to fill out this card." And this card was the Kansas Mineral and Gem Society, okay? And I said, "Yeah, I'll fill it out." He gave me the rock. I just want the rock, man. I leave. My mother says, "That's interesting. That gentleman was awful interested in you, all right?" And I come to find out later, when I'm in my 30s, I still have this rock. Before I leave, he tells me, Peter, he says, "You know, that's a very special stone. You should take it and put it under your pillow and dream with it." And I didn't make nothing of it. Yeah, okay, whatever you say. I just got a free rock, so I'm thinking. But when I leave, you know, I start actually using it in my meditation, and it was started calling it the concentration stone. And later on, I actually found that I still had it. By now, I'm pushing my 30s. By now, I'm in my 30s, all right? I remember this stone that this guy gave me and how odd it was, you know, and what he asked me to do and things, and that he felt like a scientist. Now, you know as well as I do that there's nobody that comes up to a 6-7-year-old kid and says, "Hey, what do you think about metamorphic rocks?" You wouldn't do that unless you kind of knew something about them already.
Yeah. Well, it is, because it's a bit, yeah, like you just in logic terms, you know, you're just not going to even think the kid's going to understand the darn word you got to say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know,
they're just not going to understand it.
Yeah, and hopefully I didn't go too far off subject, but how I coordinate that into what the charters actually are is every 7 years I've noticed it, all right, it happens that I'm approached by someone. And I think in the Christian Bible, there's a saying that says something like, often people have entertained angels and been unaware of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying these are angels, but I'm just saying that they're not what they appear to be, all right? And these people, these charters, they look just as me and you, but the thing about them is, for the most part, very few genetic differences I could find, but they have an energy. Their energy, all right, it pushes you a little bit. Now, you've met some people that are just excited and exciting, and they're kind of nervous to be around. This energy is like that, but it's different. It's an energy that just pushes you, and it's different. The frequency is faster, if that makes any sense.
So, in saying that. And this comes into, like, for example, my experiences with Shiji that a lot of people know about. She did have, or does have, huge eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Looks completely human, but that's just a projection, and she's actually a light being. Now, we've talked about this before, and you've just started to go into the energy signatures, which I go on a lot about with people when they're having the experiences. What do you feel from the end? What comes to mind? You know, all that type of thing. So there's an energy signature that pushes your boundaries a little bit, and what is it that makes you think they're us in the future type thing?
Oh, getting to that, yeah. I'll tell you, that's the thing, is their energy, like I said, it's different, and they're normally like, and I'm a telepath as you are, all right, and I'm a strong one, and most people can't even do it. You know, they'll try to test you or something, but most people don't even know how to do the techniques to mentally communicate with someone else telepathically, but they're different. They were like the two, when I meet one of them, they can read me and I can't block them out, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. The ones that I've seen, I've met, and I've noticed every 7 years they come around. And what I'll say is this, I think that for lifetime experiencers, about every 7 years, one of these people come around. Okay. And I call them charters because I think they're keeping charts on us. literally. Mm. I think sometimes they need to make maybe physical contact with us. Then they have to actually implant things for later. You know what I mean? When I say that, and they look as human as you and I, their energy feels different. And if you're out of tune with energy, you won't detect them, and they're going to be in your field of awareness and gone. How many times do you meet someone you don't really know who they are or where they come from or where they're going? Often, you know? But the energy that I feel from these charters, sometimes I would say it feels like maybe us, humanity, it may be in about 2,000 years in the future if we don't destroy ourselves. And in that way, it kind of goes to the Star Trek thing. If we do go that way of like a Federation better of humanity and we kind of try to go for the light, yeah. I think that's what these beings feel like, the frequency of them. They feel like humans maybe thousands of years in the future. And that just adds the questions because they don't tell me where they're from, even when I detect their energy. You know what I mean?
You're meeting that halfway where a lot of people, and people will message me this and that, and they expect me to get answers from the aliens for them, this and that. And like with the guide sessions, I help people get the information themselves. Like what you're just saying, you've got that yourself, which is mm-hmm. I trust. Mm-hmm. People expect remote viewing or telepathy to be this way out, you know, stuff, but it's not. It's just so mundane that they've got it every second going on, and they don't even friggin' realize it. So to me, that this is valid, and that's why I wanted to ask, because it's what you're saying is you feel the energy signature, you feel that they're actual human like us, not a light being, and you feel they're, you know, projected maybe 2,000 years down the track if we're on that timeline where we go for the light, like you said. So I'm glad you said it that way, because this is how easy this stuff is when you are having this experience and how you read the energy.
Yes. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm kind of being brought to bring this out. Some of the people that have started communicating with me, and one of the questions I've had to ask, or I've been asked, is a lot of people saying, I'm almost envious that you've had contact like that. That's wonderful. I want to have contact, and I've tried, and nothing happens, yada, yada, yada. You know, and I will say this, don't be so sure of that, okay? And a lot of people, I think, as you and I have already discussed, I think a third of our population is having contact already. And first contact isn't like that. It isn't the Vulcans coming down and getting off the ship with the hands of peace and love. It's not that exactly, as it is the subtle telethought. And they can reach us best when we're sleeping and astral. And the thing that makes me maybe a little different than other experiencers is that when I was a little child, I started having experiences, and they were like astral-like, almost dreamlike. Things like waking up in the middle of the night, not being at my home where I should be, being places working on things, you know, and like some weird school or something, you know what I mean? Or being different places, or having weird playmates coming up that seemed to suddenly be gone when other people would come around. You know what I mean? Weird things like that weren't the same as the people that you just make up in your mind. And, you know what I mean? You have your imaginary friends, but you have these others that you're able to perceive, that you interact with. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and I've had very similar stuff. I remember now, even like a jewelry store that wasn't too long at a shopping center where I was living when I was a kid, and I always talked to this chick, and she was a good looking bird. She would have been in her mid to late 20s, and I can remember one day she just disappeared, and nobody sort of knew who I was talking about, even mum. And I can remember we bought some jewelry off like a ring. I remember a similar lady, which I didn't think about until later years, is this the same chick that I came across in my early 20s? And the chick still seemed like she was the same age.
Yeah.
You got to be kidding yourself. We thought, you know, that's what I thought with that. So, and then there's, I've had weird shit happen, but not in the, like, that stuff was physical. But then I've had stuff, for example, I wrote about, not sure which book I wrote about this in, but it happened a couple of years ago, and I had a bloke ring me up and tell me that he was from a certain place, and then he started describing where things were in my house. And from the area code on the phone, that was a home phone, that I, I knew this bloke wasn't here, because he had to have been ringing from another phone because of the area code. This dude could describe every single friggin' thing where it was in my house. How many forks I had in the sink, where I was in the house. And at this time, I'm walking around the friggin' house, just going, he's got to be here. And the dude said that he's human and that he's living in northern New South Wales, but today I just don't know, you know, little things like that. So this is where you talking about what you're talking about doesn't seem so out there for me. But getting back to experiences, how you think a large majority, like, you know, was it a third or two-thirds you said you reckon are having contact?
Yeah, I think a third of the population is having it.
I reckon the whole lot. I personally think the whole lot.
Yeah, what I was saying was when mine started off astral and dream like that, I started asking. I mean, I wasn't being assaulted, so I started asking, you know, I need something more tangible, especially when I knew this was really kind of going on. I said, I need something more tangible, something physical. So I tried to call them in. And that's around the time that, it's like a little older, maybe around 8 or 9, E.T. came out, and the kid tried to make a shortwave radio transmitter. I tried that. I tried telepathy. I tried everything I could to get them to come around and make these physical experiences, and nothing happened. You know what I mean? And then, like, 10 years later, I wound up having a physical experience like I requested, and then I was unprepared for it. You know what I mean? And the frequency that it occurs in, trying to remember it and have a retention memory of it is very hard.
Do you want to go into that first experience?
Yeah, sure, sure. The one as far as when I was a child or when I was adult and it was physical.
Well, we'll go into the physical one. We'll go because I give them both as much tangibility as each other, but they with me, that's when it hit home for me because I had to say, like, well, actually, I was getting crafts and stuff, but that's when I was like, hey, I need to know what's going on, you know, and that's when it got physical. And that's where, to me, even though it's been with you the whole time, that's where it gets more real because you go, all right, this isn't my mind kicking in. And just quickly, while saying I believe that everyone's had contact, is not just have we all lived lives on other planes and dimensions which are happening at the same time, but there's that many times where I've talked to people about their thoughts where they get ideas that aren't their ideas and stuff comes from they don't know where, and it's because we're all having contact through, what is it, telethought you call it?
Telethought, yeah. And I call it that because telepathy seems more like just when you can pick up somebody, like, you know, someone's going to call on the phone without caller ID. That's kind of basic telepathy. But with them, it's a telethought because not just is there like a type of inner knowing words, but they grab images from my mind. I can remember a lot of things. Like, I see a movie, I can remember almost every scene. They'll grab one out of my mind and flash that with the words and with the telethought. And it comes instantly, along with a lot of others. So much so that when you kind of come out of that little trance, you can't hardly remember what they told you all. Well, you can remember something just happened to you.
That's where it comes into, like I've said to people, that I believe what's happening in my regression, whether when they're moving my hands or they're using me as a vehicle to come through, that what they're actually doing, like in a different way from what you're talking about, is they're using my body and it's like as if they're scanning my brain for a word. So, because they're like, all right, we're speaking English to this person that speaks English and we're not used to this. So they scan through the brain and they work out how to use the body. Do you know what I mean? And that's sort of what they're doing with telethought as well. They're sort of using your own reference, so you've got your own, you know, you can understand what's going on, or else you're not going to understand unless you get to an advanced point where you understand symbols and concepts and all that sort of thing, which they go into. So this is where I know exactly what you're talking about, and that is how it goes.
Yeah, and retain the memory of that is hard, and especially when we're sleeping. And I hear a lot of people tell me they have these lucid dreams and they control their dreams and yada, yada. And I'm sorry, excuse my language. I'm going to call bullshit on a lot of that, okay? Because a lot of us wake up, we don't remember our dreams, and that would mean they have a thing called dream attention, that they can control their dreams and try to shift where your awareness really is in a dream. You would realize that there are other beings jumping in our field of awareness all the time, especially when we're in that state of awareness, in the dream state. That's that other state that we talked about our last show, which was, we could call it first attention or left or right-hand side awareness, all right? And we can call the other second attention, which is like left awareness, all right? And second attention on the left side of awareness is where, like, our subconscious lies. Death, the sleep process, the spiritual things that we can't remember hardly, because most of our attention is in the first attention, which is the third dimension here. We got to pay our bills, take care of our kids, things that keep our world concrete here, but that doesn't leave very much free energy to perceive the other side.
And that's very important, what you're saying right now, which goes into what I was about to say before. It actually slides right in, which is, I believe everyone's having contact, but whether they're understanding it, in which attention they're in, is another freaking matter. So I believe everyone's having it just as much as you or me, but it depends where their attention's at. It's also with a lot of people will say to me, oh, if I deal with all my 3D shit, all my experiences stop, and then if I start thinking about it, they start up again, and it's because of where their attention is. So if you're like myself, people wonder why so much stuff is happening to me. Is it because there's something special about you? No, there's nothing fucking special about me, and I'm sorry for swearing, but everyone thinks there's something special about me. It's, I want to meet them halfway, and that's what I've done, and that's what you've done, and a lot of experiences do. We meet them halfway. What's going to happen? You're going to get more shit, because it's all got to do with consciousness.
Yeah, and there's a young lady I've been talking to a little bit. I can't remember her name now, but excuse me. But she talks about this intense drive she has to contact ships, to go on board a ship, to see who's on board. And she's tried a lot of things and nothing's happened. And all I can say is, that's fine. Cheers, as you say. But I think that, you know, actually that drive that she has to see contact and to see something, it comes from somewhere. Watching all the science fiction, it comes from somewhere. And we don't understand how subtly these influences in our life truly are, and in our whole society actually are. But I think that's what's coming to the forefront right now. And like, as you, when I did my regressions, I thought I was Mr. Conscious Experiencer. I can remember a lot of my experiences from childhood. I can see them clearly. They were very vivid. You know what I mean? But then when I go into these regressions, I was totally unprepared for the information that really came out. I was like, oh my Lord, I didn't, you know, and I couldn't remember it. And that was even more frustrating.
Well, that's an important point, because that's exactly what happened with me. And I, like I've said, the people really be prepared for the unknown, because what come from the regressions for myself was the last thing I expected, and it opened up so many more questions. But, you know, the attention thing that you're talking about is very important. But we'll get back to just at the moment with when stuff got physical for you, like with the first physical experience, like, because I think a few people will find that, or many will find that interesting.
Yeah, well, years went by, I had not had experience, and I had somebody that I was dating that I was really fond of, and we liked to meditate together and do things like that. Excuse me. So we decided to go out into the country, way out of our town there, and just kind of meditate at this weird pond that's just out in the middle of the country. You know, we live out in the middle of plains, so there's nothing out here really. Anyway, out there, we start meditating, all right? And during this meditation, we were trying to have a kundalini release, for anyone who knows what that is. And that's kind of a dangerous technique, but, you know, what the heck? We're like 19. So anyway, during this meditation, things get very, very intensely spiritual. It feels like an inner revolution. I'm feeling this energy, and it goes on for a while, all right? It's a meditation like I've never had before. I open up my eyes, and I see over this pond this light, and this light kind of materializes, for better word, kind of manifests, all right, pulses in. And I'm watching that for a little while, and I can see, as it gets a little closer, I can see it looks like a ship, a saucer. And I'd say a saucer that what I see representations of the Pleiadian ships looking like, the way Billy Myers described them, it looks similar to that, actually, okay, but on top of it is a light, all right? And it looks like almost some type of a satellite moving in a circle, all right? And every time it comes towards me, it's going roo, roo, like when you are tuning a radio frequency so loud that's about to drive you crazy. It feels like that. And more than that, it's vibrating me. And every time the light comes around, you know, I'm feeling this, and I try to kind of the person I'm sitting with, I ask her, I said, hey, you know, she's meditating in lotus position. I say, do you see this light out here? And she's kind of, hey, that's your thing, man, your thing. And she wouldn't even open up her eyes and look at it, you know, which makes me think
when we've got stuff going on, they just don't want to look. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said, okay, I'll go with that. So I just kind of went back into meditation because I didn't want to lose the feeling and the information I was apparently getting downloaded with from this ship. It was a ship. All right. Next thing I know, kind of there's a break in the frequency, and she's looking at this thing, and she's like starting to hyperventilate. And I told her, I said, well, I tried to tell you a long time ago they were there, and you wouldn't listen. You know, and then they took. I said, "Don't do anything, or you're gonna f it up. Don't freak out." Yeah. And then they took off. And then suddenly, it seems like she's standing outside of the car. I am, and the car seems to be turned a different wing. And the whole thing is just. And she's saying we could go up there, and there's a light shining on us. And I even thought, hey, you know, it must be the police helicopter. We're too far out here. They'd have caught wind of us or something. But in reality, that isn't what it was. And she's saying, you want to go up? And I started looking at it, and that's when it started turning into these crystals I've described before. Mm-hmm. It morphed, okay? And then another one came, and she seemed to be in communication with the other one to look more spherical, all right? But the bottom line is, after this was over, we were missing time. And on the way back to town, we were talking about this experience and some of the information that was relayed to us, downloaded. And by the time we get to town, 15 minutes later, we can't remember anything. And we're going, what happened? So I started thinking, man, when I start looking at modern ufology, all right, I can only find things like Betty and Barney Hill, all right, being it that I'm African-American, all right, she was of Caucasian type of
background,
yeah. And when I find that out, I find Betty and Barney Hill. And they couldn't remember a lot what happened to them. They had to be hypnotized, and then they were getting, like, probed and all that stuff. And I started thinking, oh, my Lord, did they take my sperm or something? You know, is the reason I can't remember, and start freaking out, man, you know? But so much love came with this experience first, before these beings came, that there was not – the question, was I being assaulted? It wasn't like that. You know what I mean? But nonetheless, there was this missing time, all right? So after my accident, I decided to get regressions. For years, 20 years, I tried to meditate on this and hypnotize myself and everything in the book to try to bring up these memories. And I can only see flashes of this missing time. That this first time, it was about 4 hours we were missing time. Okay, and this whole experience should have only taken 30 minutes maybe. If that makes sense. Not 4 hours. And then not being able to remember, so I went for the regression. And what came out in the regressions was totally different. I thought maybe something would even come up like, oh, you did see some lights, it was government or something, but you fell asleep, you know, and I was just going to be sitting there wasting my money, and that isn't what came out of that at all. And it was a little disturbing that I couldn't retain any of the memory of the physical experience itself.
Can you just give a quick thumbnail sketch of what came out of that regression, just for the viewers and listeners that haven't watched the other shows?
Okay. It starts off, golden and then blue light that floats me to this object, all right? And when I say float, it's a type of levitation, but you start going pretty fast to where you think you're almost going to slam into it, mm-hmm. and there appeared to be a ball at the bottom of it. Now that I know what anti-gravity actually looks like, some of the anti-gravity balls, I believe that's what it is. I went on board this ship, all right? On board this ship were these eggs, I'll call them. They were these glass metal ovular tubes. Inside these tubes were this mist, all right, and there was light inside of the tubes themselves, all right. There were crew members on board this ship, and they were out of my modal vision, okay. I could start kind of see some of them, but it's like they're kind of phased out, all right. And the ship itself appears to be organic on the inside. When I say that, the only thing here I can compare it to is like if you've seen a toadstool or a mushroom, how the texture of a mushroom is on the outside, you know, to a point to where it even led me to look up how mushrooms are formed on the inside, how they have the tunnels and the things inside of them. Yeah, so this is like that organic. And I'm saying in the regression, this thing is organic. So it's sentient. And I had forgotten when I was a child, they had told me how they grow these ships in space.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah,
the crystals, how they can grow it and what type they use and all that type of thing. It's all not what people think. Or a large majority aren't what people think anyway.
Yeah, well, they mine those metals from the planets we talked about without Van Allen belts.
Yeah.
That metal is bombarded by cosmic rays at a rate like nothing else, you know what I mean, without a magnetic shield to cover it there. And they take that and combine it with these quasi-crystals to make what our science calls metamaterials. And the metamaterials is what they're activating to shift dimensions. And that's what starts that light that makes me think they're going light speed when they're only just going a frequency higher, and they're still there in what we would call local non-cality, I believe.
Yeah. Non-locality, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, kind of like that. So, anyway, on board this ship, though, was first is getting used to going to these different rooms, okay, how the rooms kind of will materialize around you. You look into a wall, it's you're kind of there, all right? And they showed me several things. One thing was, I would call it a maturation chamber, okay? And in this chamber were, a table-like thing, but there was a being there. And it's I refer to it as the mother of the hybrids, all right? And she looked like I've seen this being similar being drawn by Christine Dennett Cassara. She draws a mother hybrid that's holding one. She looks similar to that in that her head had bulges, like two or three bulges on it. And her eyes were bigger, though, than like similar to like what they call a gray, but the eyes were that way. Okay, very big like that. And she had very long arms. I put her about 8 feet tall. Okay, she had very long arms with suckers, three fingers, suckers on the end of them, all right? And she was probably the strongest telepath I've ever encountered. She's leaning over this machine, and I can see, like, this machine looks like, wow, anybody that's familiar with Star Trek The Next Generation, there's a place where Commander Worf and Lieutenant Yar stand at the helm up there just above the bridge. But the way that piece of table is shaped, it's circular like that with a little bit of metal in it. It looks similar to that, and she's telling me that it's not working right and it could kill someone. It could kill someone, and she's asking me to help to fix it. And I said, are you kidding me? I've never seen anything like this in my life. And the telethought she's giving me is so strong, you know, that suddenly it's like, I'm smashing against her eye, which is very large. You know what I mean? And the other problem, yeah, and this kind of addresses what I've been asked a little bit. In the maturation chamber itself, Peter, there is like a mist in there. And I don't know, and it smelled a lot like ammonia, Windex, and it's hard to breathe in there. On all this ship, it wasn't all like that. There wasn't this mist everywhere outside inside of these tubes. But in the maturation chamber, there was a lot of this mist. And it was very hard to breathe in there, and it made me get even more sick to the point where I can't tune her out, name one. I can't breathe. I'm getting temporal aphasia, as they called it, getting sick, maybe temporal psychosis of some kind. I don't know. But that almost terminated the experience. They had to almost send me back after that. But being on there, they took me to a couple of different ships. They showed me a planet that was devastated. I didn't know the meaning of it at the time. You know what I mean? But it... I see now it's a lot of it's about Earth, I think, and about the upgrading of humanity. But the point is, I couldn't remember any of that until I got regressed.
Yeah. And we've covered that a little bit in the other shows as well, but so people can go back. But I wanted you to elaborate, like you said, it's best if we do that so people don't have to go back. But there'll be other things that, you know, you always bring up something different, like I do on each show too. Getting back to the charters.
Yes.
With the rocks and that type of thing, do you ever use the rocks still for meditating, or has anything else happened with the charters since those experiences that you've taught? Like, obviously this happened when you were a kid, and there's been, what was the other experiences with the charters that have happened?
The next time I had one approach me, I was aware of, I was into my 20s, but like I said, every 7 years that I've calculated, they come around, and this just appeared to be a very, very attractive woman that appeared to be of African-American and Hispanic background, all right? And, you know, she approached me in a situation where I was out somewhere hanging out where I was getting bored, and I was just kind of having a really lame night. And the first thing she does when I sit down with her is she starts looking at me, and immediately I can start detecting her in my mind. And she says, you know, your problem is you don't know how to make a synergy with your concentration, all your energy. You don't know how to do that. You're kind of too spread out. And she said a couple of things. I could totally feel her reading me, and I tried to block her, and then I couldn't. I tried to block her. She's looking at me, you know, really strange and laughing and kind of smiling. I'm like, my Lord, she's powerful. She's strong. I can't shut her out. And eventually this individual was gone. But she gave me a lot of things that were future things to be aware of energetically and kind of how to maybe achieve whatever I came here for. I realized later this is one of them. You know, last one would have been a few years ago. I actually had the chicken pox well into my 30s. Horrible experience. But anyway, when I was getting my medicine, I ran into somebody that appeared to be, the only thing I could say that's different about him physically was his torso was a little too long for his legs, and he was riding a Schwinn bicycle. He comes up, and he has on a, anybody familiar with the 60s, he had on these things that are called kitty cats, the sunglasses that kind of look like kitty cats.
Yeah.
And you know, and he thinks he's like, yeah. He thinks he's got really cool, man, and he looked like somebody that isn't around people very much. Yeah. Like I said, he is actually asking for money. And the way he did it was very odd. The sound of his voice was odd. And I could immediately detect him, both telepathically and energetically, as he's one of them. You know what I mean? And he was apparently aware of me, too. But what are you going to say? Are you from another dimension? Are you from space? And then he's gone, and it just kind of works like that. Yeah. So that makes sense. But I think they come and are keeping charts on experiencer, lifetime experiencers. I don't know if they're from another dimension. I don't know if from another solar system, the future. I don't know. But they feel like humans, which makes me think humanity is more than just biology.
Yeah. And you feel they're about, what, 2,000 years ahead, around that, like, just a ballpark figure.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because, you know, I don't know how much further our physical bodies will evolve. I've been asked if I've seen anything different about them. The one I noticed, that some of their eyes are just a little, just really bigger eyes. Yeah. But I mean, that's nothing that any human wouldn't have, a genetic difference that a human wouldn't have. The other thing would be the lobe of their ear. It seems like it's kind of missing.
Yeah, lobe. You talked about that off the air about that.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting point to make. It is. And it's something for people to think about, because continuously, like me now, I keep picking up on stuff that goes back in time, and I keep connecting the dots. And it's as if, in a way, too, that when these things are happening, those part of the interaction are sort of smirking on the inside, going, at this time down the track, he's going to look back and go, you know, he's going to pick up on what this interaction was about.
You read Ingo Swann's book, Penetration, right?
Yeah, I can't remember heaps and heaps. I remember bits of it. I read it a few years ago. I had a PDF version of it. Apparently it goes for a few bloody hundred these days.
Yeah. You know, when he passed, it seemed to have actually get a little cheaper. But when I first got hip to that, when I heard Richard Hoagland talking about it, that was going for $2,500 on Amazon.
Wow.
I mean, went to Barnes & Noble and said, hey, am I seeing this wrong? And the guy's like, what in the world is this back? And it's called Penetration, The Human Quest for Extraterrestrial Telepathy. But during this book, he talks about being in Los Angeles and being at a supermarket and seeing who was an extraterrestrial woman buying vegetables. And also, he talks about what we would call men in black that he dealt with before that came to the university that he was doing paranormal experiments with. But he talked about seeing them there watching her and then leaving and asking his friend, did you see that lady? And his friend says, yeah, do I think she was from space, an extraterrestrial? Yeah, and there are a whole lot of them here in L.A. Yeah. And my brother used to live there, and he said, oh, there's just millions of people there. They're so strange that you wouldn't, you know. So it makes you wonder how many people in our population are not what they appear to be.
Oh, they walk among us. That's
definitely.
But when you try to narrow down who exactly, I can't say, but I'm sure little bits and pieces of everything that's part of the bigger picture is popping in and out and walking amongst us. I'm dead set sure on that. And that people can do with that what they want. Yeah, there's been a few things lately when I've been in the city, and I know that one of these chicks was definitely not from here. The others that were with me agree. And then we've got bloody black helicopters flying around this structure. We're in the middle of the city, and then men in black, like military-type dudes with these earpieces coming with the mouth, you know, so they can talk to each other and all these bloody things, and suits come in. And within 2-3 minutes of us, like there was four of us, me, Sol, and a couple of other people, Lee and Mick actually, and all of a sudden I don't even know where the, and another mate, and I don't even know where these dudes went, and there's nowhere they could have gone, and we're in the friggin' city, and so this is where this stuff's, you know, whether you're in a city, whether you're rural, it just, it's going to happen and play out how it's going to happen, and sometimes you're not going to, you're going to look back and go, oh, there's something odd about this, and then you'll pick up on it later, but yeah, it's just one of those things. What we'll do now, we'll take a little twist in the conversation here, and we'll go towards some of the time travel devices and technology and some stuff going on. But last time I had you on the show, we had to stop because we had some helicopter activity, weird enough, and then
that was weird, man.
We'll cut out. We didn't get to go too much into it, and we couldn't get a proper connection established after that happened. Now, just for those that haven't seen the other shows as well, do you want to go into just this, the story with the device that you were given and how it came to be and about how you saw the other you, and then we can go a bit more into the actual device and other types of technologies as well?
Sure.
Yep.
Bro, okay, when I was a kid, again, around that age, about 7, 8, somewhere around in there, I'm walking home from school, and I saw a brother standing on this bridge by where my parents lived. And at first, I thought he was one of my brothers. Okay, I've got two older brothers, one that didn't live in town at that time, but his hair was wrong, but he looked like he could be family, all right? And when I tried to get closer to him, he stuck his hands up and kind of said, shook his hand, no. And so I immediately ran back home and told my mother there was some stranger down there trying to give me some candy or something, because I was the late 70s. That was a big deal, you know, strangers giving candy.
Pervert from Family Guy. Have you seen him?
Yeah. You know, the whole thing was so weird, though. It's just one of those things you just don't forget that kind of just startled you and strikes you as weird. You know what I mean? But when I got older, okay, and it's something I never forgot, one day I was getting dressed about to go out and Lawrence, Kansas, visiting some friends up there, and I had like a different outfit, and as I'm looking at it, I just cut my hair off, actually, and I'm looking in the mirror, and the outfit and my hair, I look like this guy I saw on the bridge all these years ago. And, you know, it dawned on me how odd that was, you know what I mean? So you've got a difference in age there, secondly, all right? So I'm saying, okay, I think I saw myself, all right? Years go on later, I have this car accident, and a friend comes to talk to me after I'm getting well, and he tells me, you know, I remember you talking about Art Bell and a time device, like time machine travel, time technology. You know something about that, don't you? And so we started talking about it, and I wound up going back and listening to that episode of Art Bell. And it was a guy on there named Stephen Gibbs in 1993 that was saying he had a device that was a time-traveling device, okay? And so I found this guy's number, and I just called him, all right? And when we talked, first I figured he was kind of probably crazy, a kook. The jury's still out on that. But anyway, I considered he probably would be crazy, all right? But the first thing he starts saying is, when we talk, is, I was wondering when I'd hear from you again. And I said, well, you know, I've never talked to you before. And he says, yeah, I want to know how you like that other machine. The machine. And I said, look, you've never talked to me or sent me one, anything like that. And he claims that he knew, like, voice recognition, and it was my voice and yada yada, and it was 2 years before that I had got one of these machines from him. And that's very odd, all right? The next thing he says is, have you seen your double yet? Now, that threw it into another realm there. There's no way this hokey guy, I'm sorry, this guy could have known that. All right, and that kind of threw me for a loop. And he's saying that, and I said, you know, 2 years ago, you certainly wasn't me, because I was in an accident 2 years ago. At that point, I was in a coma for about a month, and it just wasn't me, believe me. And he starts saying, is there something odd about you, the way you healed, maybe that it's kind of almost a miracle or something? And he said, that's what it is. He was doing something to your timeline and something to mine. He said, what did your double do when you saw him? I said, I tried to approach him, and he shook his head. No. He said, it's because it would have messed up your timeline. That's why. And that's when things just got really, really odd. So I wanted to get my hands on one of these devices he had.
Now, just right? before just before we go any further, just so people have got an idea, would you mind telling the viewers in the audience why you're in the coma?
Oh, I had a car accident, actually, for being on my high IQ, not wearing my seatbelt. Poster child for click it or lose it. I went through several windows, and I had 4 catastrophic traumatic brain injuries. I was in a coma for about a month, and it was about 12 days, 11 days, and it took about a month and a half to remember who I was. When I actually remembered who I was, I realized I'd had a near-death experience, and that takes it into another realm, but that's what it was from.
How long were you actually in the coma for?
For about 11 days. Shit. I think for about the first week after that, they said I was conscious, but according to my siblings and parents, it just meant that I was like rolling my eyes in my head like for 10 minutes or 5 minutes a day.
I can't believe how much you knew. Because they said you would never be the same, and here you are. And
Yeah, they only said I'd be a vegetable, most likely, and unable to interpret and deal with information. You know, there's been a few problems with it as far as emotional regulations go and things like that, but cognitively, I've been very blessed. So they said I have no lifetime memories either, but God saw that differently. So that's why we
blessed that you're in my life and you're a friend. That, you know, I'm absolutely blessed to have you too. So we all are. Well, so what we'll do, we'll carry it on from there, because I just wanted to the viewers and listeners to know that you had this experience, and this dude is saying that you had gotten in contact with him. This is what had happened in the meantime. You've had a friggin' car accident, and you're in a coma, and you're doing rehabilitation.
Yeah, yeah.
And how'd the shit go down from there? Obviously, you've got the device.
Well, he told me that I sounded older when I talked to him on the phone before. And that's odd, because when you look at the experience chronologically, all right, I was at the age of 7 or 8 when I see this individual on the bridge, but this individual appeared as I looked about the age of 22, okay? So there's a time difference there, or a time lag of some type, all right? So anyway, the next step is I talked Gibbs into sending me one of these machines for some discount or something. And that gets even more odd, because he also sent a lot of journals with it and things that I'm pretty sure he didn't make. I know a little of quantum mechanics, and he didn't seem to know much more than me, but some of these journals he sent are like the Philadelphia Experiment, simplified, and different devices he said he hadn't made yet, and I just don't think he made these blueprints. So when I ask him,
is he still around at all?
Yeah, as far as I know, he is. He's got a number, like this number he keeps all secure that isn't too far from where I actually live, I don't think. But anyway, yeah. So you can actually call him, and he'll send you one of these machines, and you have to send the money to this mysterious P.O. box, and it's very odd, but he'll send you.
So he sent you some journals and stuff with it. Is he claiming to have invented the technology, but you don't think he's done it, like he did it? Is that what you're saying?
No, when I asked him, I called him, I said, I want to know where you got these journals, because first of all, he said he couldn't print them off. And it would be like a couple of months before he could get them to me, and they come like the next day.
Yep.
All right. And when I say, "Where'd you get these patents from? These blueprints?" And he said, "From time travelers from the future, one of which was myself." He also claimed that he comes from a timeline where there was no such thing as the Twilight Zone movie, the Twilight Zone series. He said he sold one of these resonators. It's called a hyperdimensional resonator. He said he sold one to Rod Serling. And then suddenly there was this Twilight Zone show. And it's awful interesting. I must admit, I was a fan of the original series, and a lot of them were about time travel. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that's trippy. I haven't seen the show myself. I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen it myself. You've got the device there, don't you?
Yes, yeah, I've got it here.
Do you want to just give us a bit of an overview of view of it?
Sure. It's where we got cut off last time, I believe, so we keep it going. This is it. This is the hyperdimensional resonator, all right? It's got a couple of switches on it here, toggle switches on here, which is a rubbing plate, all right, with a device here you can tune with it. And what it would be is basically a radionics device. It's a type of radionics device. On the side here, you can see the plugs in which you plug in this, I'm going to get this blasted magnet too close to my computer, but it comes this electromagnet here that's just huge that you plug in with it. And also,
and you're saying, lucky I put
along with this headband you put on, basically, you know, that you know, you go along with that, you plug this thing in during a full moon, all right, And you can put various crystals or whatever in the witness well here to help tune it. But you put that thing on and you try to tune yourself, all right, with it. And he gives it. He gives one of these manuals with it. He sent to me that gives very specific instructions. You have to find a place on your property that's low on photonic energy, all right, like a vortex, basically. Mm-hmm. Then you have to hold this incredibly huge electromagnet over your solar plexus chakra, and then that will give you a physical time jump. On a full moon like tonight, it's the harvest moon tonight. So on a full moon tonight, it's supposed to give you a physical time jump, okay? And he gives other techniques to give astral jumps as well. And I tried them, all right? It didn't work. But I will say, I will say this. When you activate the machine, if you have a watch up to it, it does do something with electromagnet. It does do something with the time field, all right? So before I actually use this thing, I want to make sure it wasn't going to electrocute my ass. Oh, excuse me, electrocute me. So I had an engineer friend of mine take it apart and see what actually makes it work. So you know what I mean? And it runs on a thing that's called the caduceus coil, which is a type of copper wire twisted a certain way, all right? And that interferes with the time field. So you can put a watch next to this electromagnet, and it'll just go crazy, according to the pole, more than what normal electromagnets would. You know what I mean?
So do you get a time differential? Like, some people don't know this, but if you get a plane and the higher you go in the atmosphere, the more the seconds change. So is there a difference in seconds on how the watch is affected? Is it faster? Is it slower? Or?
Oh, it'll go incredibly fast.
Right.
Yeah, I'm quite aware it's like speeding incredibly. And if you go to the other side of the magnet, it'll go opposite. And you can reverse the polarity of the magnet, seems like, with something they call one of these toggle switches here, right? But I will say this, okay? When I tried, this was on Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Zone, and they wouldn't use it because they thought it could damage their chakras or something. But I tried it anyway, all right? And what I will say is I started having some weird deja vu, all right? Starting with this, I had some sushi in the refrigerator that I had, and the people that I lived with, it was suddenly gone. It's only one person here, and they don't eat sushi. I didn't know what happened to it, and it's like very odd. You know what I mean? So little weird things seemed to be just a little off, if that makes any sense. And when it got very odd is I started thinking that, you know, when I looked at the inside of it, I know enough about time technology to maybe augment this enough to where it could do something. You know what I mean? And I started making some sketches of it, all right? And when I started making these sketches, I started getting this weird feeling of deja vu, so I took the sketches and threw them away. You know, and because you know why? And I started thinking all of a sudden, Peter, I started thinking, wow, if I'm intelligent enough to augment this thing enough to make it do something, if there really was a parallel version of me, would he not have the same ability, maybe more so? And it kind of threw this whole different equation into everything. Like, my God, this is real. At least what's happening anyway is, to a certain degree. And that's how I come across John Teeter and things like that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, all right. So, it can work, but it doesn't work how it's claimed to work.
Yes, yes. All
right. So, this is where I know this shit's as real as much as, you know, the skeptic, they go, oh, well, it's all a load of shit. No, it's not all a load of shit. I know from experience this stuff, not that device personally, but from tapping into my own light body and my own essence, I know, just like yourself, through meditation and through interacting with the beings, that there is a time travel, even with the crafts. Not only are the crafts able to change vibrational densities, but they can go back and forth in time. Like in one of my regressions, they showed time as a sheet and that we can jump off and pop off, you know, wherever we want to go. So all crafts are basically a time travel device, but they can also go into other realms and whatnot. And you can do this without a craft, with your own light body, your Merkaba. But with this device, there is something to it. So you're basically tapping into something where you were able to, you didn't do it, but you were getting information on how to alter the device. But you end up throwing at the notes, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just from the knowledge that I've obtained this lifetime here. But the fact is, I thought I saw what we could call a doppelganger of myself.
I actually, I was like, joking around, I call him a double banger.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. I had to throw that in.
Sorry. But, you know, but when thinking about this machine and augmenting it, to the point of where I contacted Mr. Gibbs again, and this time our conversation didn't go that well. When he talked to me for hours before about don't make a time jump into the past, and with the dinosaurs, they'll eat you. They look much more like birds. He was right about that. But I'm thinking, when he say stuff like that, he was taking time jumps to the gates of heaven and stuff like that. I was, okay, the guy's too off. But I told him, anybody ever tell you your machine doesn't work? And he started going, and he was quiet for just a second. And I said, I could augment it, though, to make it work. And he goes, oh, I don't want to hear that shit. And he said, the first thing is, he said, hey, no, this is what he says, though, Peter. I don't even think it's funny, but it really tripped me out. He says, if my machine doesn't work on you, the only reason it wouldn't work on you is because you're one of those soulless alien hybrids. If you're one of those soulless alien hybrids, my technology won't work on you. And I never told the guy I had contact, but that's another deal. But
the other thing is too, but if that was true, he would have known that anyway from the other you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It makes me wonder. And he said that he's had others visit him from the future, one of which he claims was himself. And his own self gave him some of these blueprints. And he's got a bunch of them here. And they're actually pretty good. Quantum time travel, how to construct a Philadelphia experiment, simplified. And they're like journals he's put together, but they're actually pretty good. Time travels, compodium, zero vector. You got to love this one. The Hitchhiker's Guide to Time Travel. But the blueprints in there are kind of interesting, you know what I mean? But as far as this device, I think it's a telepathic device, okay? I think it's radionics, and it reminds me of something that's called the Radionics 2400 or RAD-5, and there's another radionics device called the Wishing Well and another one called the Telepathic Blaster. You can get on YouTube and see those, and they've got a rubbing plate and toggle switches similar to this, all right? Yeah. So I think just maybe he doesn't know what it truly does. That makes sense.
In saying that, it works, but not how this dude claims. And in saying that, you think it's more of a telepathic device.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think it amplifies brain waves in some way.
Can you elaborate on how that would work? How, like, if you go into the science of it, just as layman as you can, just for those so people can understand. Well, as technical as you want, honestly, just however you want to relate.
You know, I think the electromagnet does something maybe to our chakra system that allows us to project our thoughts maybe a little easier. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what I'm thinking. And that the way you actually have the wishing well in there, that there's several crystals and things like that, and the caduceus coil itself that's actually make that thing function. I think that just might help to amplify our brain waves a little bit.
Basically,
like kind of like throw away or something like that.
Sort of like how a quartz crystal amplifies whatever, you know, is going on, but this will do it, you know, more than that.
Yeah. That's what I would say, definitely. Yeah. You know, and I'm hip to, like, current time technology now that is realistic, that I'm more into, that I think he's missing the point of, that it's kind of what I'm trying to...
How about we go into some of that? What we'll do is two things. We'll go into some of the current things that are out that you think there's something to, and also some of the, you know, even something like John Teter and some of the other people that claim what they've experienced or what they're doing is actual real. So which would you like to go with first?
We can go through what I think is what actually marketed, what we can see on the market right now, this time technology.
All right,
and right now that would be things like stasis fields, things in the hospital, you know, certain things like...
Sorry to cut you off.
There was
an article I posted lately. I don't know if I told you about this or mentioned it on the other shows, where apparently here in one of the, I think it was the University of Queensland here in Australia, I think they got a photon particle, if I'm quoting the article right, you can just type in some of the words I'm about to tell you in what the search bar on petermaxwellslattery.com. They got a photon to travel back in time and interact with itself, apparently.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they broke that barrier. Yeah.
Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I think they found that it actually existed like two places at one time, which is what we would call bi-location.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And
I know that they've been able to teleport it, I think even up to like 20 kilometers or so. I don't know if it was this university, but they were able to teleport photon particle, but now they're saying they time travel it back. I don't know how it works.
You know, that doesn't surprise me, because when looking at like things like the looking for the Hobbes bison that they're looking for,
yep,
and these things like CERN and all that, they're basically cyclotrons, and they're creating these exotic particles that exist, what, less than a millisecond, mm-hmm, or something like that. But they've had so many different exotic particles
they
found.
Very short lives.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, it's no way to tell now. And, you know, that brings up kind of the whole John Titor thing, doesn't it? Because John Titor was supposedly the time traveler that called in Art Bell. That's what happened there a lot. And he said that he had a Corvette that I posted on my Facebook that is a picture of this device that looks like it have similar components to our little device here, but that he came from the year 2036, and he came back to get an IBM computer, like one of the originals, to decode something that went wrong in the future. But he said that he came here through technology that was produced by a company called Acern, A-C-E-R-N, in all caps. And at that time, when he came on the air, that was like 1990-something, I don't think there was such a company. And now Acern turns out being one of these companies that created one of these huge cyclotrons in Europe, right? And that's very interesting, because he said they would inadvertently discover time travel.
Yeah, that's it. Is it CERN or Acern? Because Mary's got the Acern. Mary Rodwell's got
CERN.
The Australian Close Encounter Research Network. And then
CERN.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I just didn't know. No, that's all right. Which, that's very interesting, because he was going on about a lot of the stuff that they were doing at the place in Switzerland where they've got the Hadron Kaleidoscope. Years before it was really even going into the pub, before a lot of people were talking about it, he was talking about it first. There's some things that didn't happen, some things that did happen, and I think, listening to what I have since you've brought it to my attention, I think the story as it goes along just gets more weirder. It's like, whether it's real or not, it just gets more trippy as you go along. And it's interesting just to even listen to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, you've got things right now that can be seen literally in our society. Like I said, the things that they're doing, like, medically right now, that are stasis fields. And there's a company, and I kind of talk about it a lot, that's the Anderson Institute, all right?
Yeah.
And, what they're doing is actually making a different type of preservation for organs that is different than cryogenics, using stasis fields. And they've got different things, just like things we're using to scan people with right now to get abnormalities, excuse me, in the blood and things like that, using electromagnets. But there's still a time delay in there, all right? And so some of the theories there, I think, need to be looked at very closely, what they're using and how they're getting this technology on the market itself.
I was interested in it when you showed it to me, because out of all the stuff I've looked at, this to me is sort of the most legit and most interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Like the website presents itself well. There's a few videos and there's lots of information on the different things that they're doing. So it's not like just some half-assed job or theories.
Yeah.
It's more putting into practice the theory with devices.
Yeah. And, you know, when looking at real-time, not time travel, but time control technology, time control technology is different. We have to look at some of the things we found now, like the Doppler effect, all right, and how that is the delayed signal that they had to get all the satellites correct, like one time a year, I think it was, because they were going off by like a minute or something. Mm-hmm. And that's what we actually call the Doppler effect now. And there's another thing, the technology of what we call time-like closed curves, all right? And that's a way of bending space in a way that we would call similar to a wormhole. Yeah. You know what I mean? So those are just a few things there that kind of are journeying on that more of an effect, or like time-like wormholes also. And those are things that we know of now that are newer theories that I think are coming to relish. You know, sometimes too often I think we think of, when we think of time travel, we're thinking about things like the Philadelphia experiment, using magnets in that way to kind of interfere with the time field, and some of the experiments that supposedly came from that, or disasters as far as I know, the Montauk Project. But I think we've got some other things going on right now that is using technology in the year 2014, not the year 1963. You know what I mean? I think we need to look at some of those newer theories a little bit more.
Well, in saying that, what gets me, and I know from being on the craft, like some of the crafts that I've been on, it's they're either created by thought and they navigate by thought. Then you've got less advanced types of ones where they're still way advanced than what we've got here in terms of they've got a symbiotic, all of them got a symbiotic relationship, like, anyway.
Yeah.
And you've got the types you're talking about that are organic, that are grown, which I believe a lot of them are like that, whether it's the minerals or the crystals or whatever it is that they're using. It's done in that way, and they've still got a symbiotic relationship. In saying that, like I've talked to you and one of our mates, I won't say who at the moment, about working on anti-grav technology, and like I said to you and him one day, that's cool, but you've got to work out the symbiotic relationship, and then you've got to work out the navigation process. So we're going to time travel technology, there has to be, just in my opinion, I'm not sure, I could be completely wrong, but to me there would have to be a telepathic component to it, because if you don't, it's too complex and too advanced to try and navigate which vibration or density or dimension you want to go to, and whereabouts and whereabouts in time, though time doesn't exist, where you go. So with these devices that you've looked into, how would the navigation process be? Would it, is it in your opinion, would it have to be telepathic? Like, we've heard of these things like the chronovisor and all these looking glass and stuff where they could tune in on a basically a TV-type device and they could go and look at the crucifixion of Christ or anything like that. But, and I don't know if these exist, and they well and truly could be after looking at Andrew DeBasigo, you know, his story. We've talked about that. What do you think? Is that there would have to be a telepathic component to it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what I've seen, I can tell you on some of the craft I've been on, is there's no doubt that the inside and outside are not in the same dimension, all right? And I think it goes even deeper than that, in that there's a thing like the drive system itself is like a dimensional displacement drive, okay? It's definitely displaced, temporal displacement, all right? And that's got to be what's coming from the engine core itself, because it's actually built over a singularity. All right, and we had talked about that, how they're grown in shit in space, what some of the materials they used to grow them in space with. But when we think about they're growing them in zero gravity over a singularity themselves, that's why the engine itself is the singularity. You know, and I agree that there's definitely a telepathic component. I've seen suits that some of them wear, like the Andromedans I saw, that have these suits that have these light white, blue strip suits, has light white strips on them. They almost look like racing strips, all right, and uniforms we would have here.
Yep.
But they're also, some of these panels are organic. They're not exactly touching them, all right? So that's telling me it's a telepathic drive. And there's some type of a filament there they're telling me that's similar to what we would call fiber optics, but it's different. It's way more advanced than what we know normal fiber optics to be. But I have no doubt that that's where our knowledge of that came from, is their technology. Our knowledge of fiber optics, so I would call it a telepathic drive.
With the crafts, like there is a component sometimes of crystals. Have you found any of that? Even though a craft, you could say is a time travel device, like because you can do that in the crafts. Is there any of the technology you've come across where there's been crystals involved for time travel technology?
You know, I can honestly tell you, I don't know, because it seems like most of the crystals they've shown me was involved with powering systems, powering things, and also I've encountered crystals that were used for telepathic transfer of a fetus. And a lot of these crystals are organic, so I mean it could be anything, and most of their technology is organic crystalline. I do know that, at least the ones I've dealt with anyway, so I would say yes or no. I mean, I can't specifically answer that. For sure. That makes sense. I don't know.
Well, what I'll do now is we'll take it a little bit off this and off the time travel thing, and we'll go into your experiences and your knowledge. Yeah, go on. Sorry, mate.
No, so one thing I wanted to add, because I think somebody maybe asked me this, current time technology they're using, that what I would look at that's different and something that really should be evaluated. Like, I know there's a different way they're using technology now. They're creating like an antenna base. All right, and antenna configuration that's creating magnetic rotating vortexes. All right, fields, rotating magnetic vortexes or fields in this antenna configuration. Okay, next thing they have is they have an injection system that's injecting a gaseous agent into this core field. So we're almost talking about a time bubble. All right, this agent, this gaseous agent. The third thing they do is these high energy lasers that they're induced into it, all right? That are tweaked in a certain type of way that's creating a dimensional disturbance there in actual time, a time bubble itself. And I think my understanding is they can only advance the bubble. I don't think they can take it backwards.
And who's working on these?
As far as I know, the Anderson Institute is.
All right, yep.
Yeah, and they've got things. If you look at their blueprints there, I mean, they've got things that are for all different types of warp drives, wormhole creation, a lot of different things, cosmic strings, a lot of things like that that are taking it to a different level.
Going back a bit of time now, I've known you for around a year or more now. You sent me some friggin' patterns that you found on Google pertaining to time. They're just on friggin' Google that anyone can go and look at. And some of these were pretty cool. I think there was almost like a vibrating suit or something that vibrates so you can walk through walls or something.
Yeah, there's that one. There's also the full body teleportation device that allows, and you notice that looked a lot like the structure would look like the Montauk towers, kind of, and someone can walk through it and it'll advance you like so far into another location where it actually teleports you. And it's they've got things like that and different things from like Lockheed and Smith that are actually not just time devices, but space vehicles that are, you know what I mean? And some of them are, they're capable of time travel. And when you start looking up these patents, and the United States doesn't just give out a patent that easy.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And they list the scientists that create these things. So if you go back and look up the scientists and see the devices they had, heck, you can YouTube half of them now and start seeing the things they were building. Like Mr. Ring, remember that guy? Otis Carr?
Yeah,
and I think Robert Ring is their name.
Yeah.
They made something that's anti-gravity all the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's back in the 60s. I mean, to tell me now we still use rocket propulsion to go to the moon, we have anti-gravity. You know, we all seen the thing in the 60s, the little thing, the USAF, and just drive right around like that, and the guy can't control it. In the 60s, in 2014, we haven't come any further with that.
Well,
that's insulting.
Yeah, it is. And people saying that about the SR-71, they still think it's the fastest and the highest altitude flying thing today. And it's like, well, that's 60s, whatever it is. And do you really think, and I even heard John Lear say it on an episode once, I think with Art Bell or George Norrie, where he said, he knows some of them dudes that fly them, and they're apparently part of a group called the Road Runners, I think it is, and every year or something they met up in Las Vegas, I think, and they still toast to being the fastest people, and he's sitting there laughing in his head, I think, going, do you really think we haven't come further and made faster, if not technology that far surpasses what they were flying back then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would we give the old hat? I think we even gave one of those to the Russians at a later date. So why the hell would we give, you know, well, we're with you guys, we're allies, the United States and Australia and England and New Zealand, and why the hell would we give one of our rivals, one of our bloody jets to kick ass? And nobody even knows the altitude that it does. So you're exactly right on that. Something I was going to mention too is apparently with John Titor, that I've looked into it. Apparently, the device he was talking about had been patented. Which is very interesting.
The time travel device.
And like you just said, it's not just anyone can go and get a patent done.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. And I posted it on the internet, but it's a picture of this Corvette he's supposed to be having this time device in there. And I believe that he said it was made by General Electric, didn't he? A General Electric patent?
I can't remember. You might be right. You might be. Is it in a Corvette?
Yeah. It's in a Corvette, and it's
not
like
the DeLorean.
Yeah, it looks like no flax capacitor. By the way, our friend Stephen Gibbs said that they also constructed that. One of those is called that, and says that he sent one of those machines to the guy that made the hyperdimensional resonator to the guy that made the rope Back to the Future. That didn't exist where he came from either. Just thought you'd want to know that anyway.
This trippy
stuff. Turn this thing off. Maybe I'll put this thing on since it's a full moon. Let's see if I get electrocuted. Anyway.
That's what I was laughing about before the show when you're going, yeah, I'll just put this on my head and get electrocuted and hold this frigging thing. And that's trippy. So what I'll ask you now, Barry, is no one's got the full picture like we know. You know, you and me have talked about this. Nobody knows exactly what's going on, because if we did, you know, we wouldn't be chatting about it or anything. Where's your experiences led you, and with what's going on for you now, and where do you think things are at in terms of what we could either say the shift or the awakening or the conscious unveiling? I don't know.
You know, I can say, as far as I'm concerned, it's the upgrading of consciousness that they've talked about so much, and this awakening now that it gives a lot of us a chance to burn karma. But it's happening so subtle, and I'm afraid that humanity is close to wiping itself out. I've had a lot of people that are talking to me right now about doom and gloom. You know, a lot of people on the internet right now, and all these negative things are going to happen, and this and that. And I told you before, my guides, and none of them, whether it be angelic, light beings, extraterrestrial, they're not talking about doom and gloom. They said that the planet has already been destroyed once, almost. They said that. But like we talked before, that's in the past. They said in the past. But in the future, as far as where we're going, they don't give me those type of projections. You know what I mean? The doom and gloom thing. But I will say this. The sun is acting very erratic, all right? And we discussed that before. It's producing these solar flares. It's going crazy again on us, all right? Something I followed a lot, which is Ed Dames. I don't know if you caught, I posted that. Ed Dames was the remote viewer that seemed to come forward first when the government got exposed for that. But he talked about Fukushima and things like that in 1992-93, all right? And he described many things that would happen and come for what he called the bow shot. And the bow shot, he said, would create basically Fukushima. But then he talked about the kill shot. And anybody that goes and Googles the kill shot Ed Dames can find his website. Well, they will send this video out to you for free. You just have to pay the $2 for the shipping, all right? But on this kill shot, he talks about that would be a solar flare so powerful it will penetrate our atmosphere and knock out just several major power grids. And that will cause catastrophic anarchy here on Earth. If just a few of those grids go down for a few years, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
All right. But the thing about this kill shot, and I try not to be negative with this, but the thing about the kill shot, so many other things he predicted has come true.
I know. Yeah.
But the kill shot, he said there'll be a sequence of events that would happen. One is North Korea detonating a nuclear deal that would kill people this time, and the next thing he said would be a prototype shuttle. Space shuttle that would come down.
Which just happened.
The people would be killed in it.
That happened, and, you know, Virgin, isn't it?
I remember this guy saying this in 93.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that just happened. Yeah. And so I'm getting very nervous right now. I'm trying not to focus on that. But man, you know, and I think that the Earth, the sun is responding to humanity on Earth. The morphogenic field, that field that it generated by humanity here, is not one of love. It's of hate, war, kill. And our sun is reacting to that right now. We're torturing our own biosphere. It's calling out to its parent star. So that's what worries me a little bit. And I think that maybe, like Mary Rodwell's work with the kids, and what I'm seeing with some of the new star kids coming in, or indigos, whatever you want to call them, Homo Superior, I don't know. I think that's our best chance. That's their upgrade of technology.
Well, it does lie with the kids. And I've said that many a time. Mary said that. She's been saying that for a very long time, and I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. Talking about Ed Dames, I think I've done the course, and I did that in at the same time started meditating. I did it from the DVD pack. I was blown away. I probably wouldn't be where I would say I wouldn't be where I am now in terms of telepathic ability if it wasn't for that. Now I don't need to do it that way, but I actually did some training here not long ago, and people were just like, geez, this is not what I thought. It's easy, but it just blew them out. And he has been spot on about a lot of things. That the problem that people don't understand with remote viewing, it's not really a problem. You've just got to look at it and say, look, these are the probabilities. When you're doing it in a group like he does, you sort of look at the commonalities. And he seems to, you know, with the commonalities over and over, they prove to be right. Mm-hmm. When they're not, if they're not, it's usually that you're on a wrong timeline. Or
So this
is where you can't dismiss what he's saying, but you can't see it as the gospel at the same time, because it could actually be happening, but it's on another frigging timeline.
But he
has been right about a hell of a lot, like you said. And like you said, this goes back to the 90s where he's predicted a lot of this with a lot of other people that I think he says that he's got a team. So this is where, I think with the Pentagon, how they originally got the funding for SRI when Ingo and Pat Price and all these other dudes were part of it. They got the officials to do it themselves, and it's basically what everyone in the room gets. You can almost say that's a dead shot. That's sure to be there. Mm-hmm. Whatever isn't, you sort of put in the grey basket and go, these are possibilities. And later when they were able to get into other installations or find stuff out for sure, a lot of that stuff that were in the grey basket ended up being at the spot as well that they were doing as a target. So this is where, you know, that's something people have got to sort of take from their own experience. I think there's something to a lot of it. I know personally for myself that there are good days ahead, but for us to get there, it's like we've got to clear our baggage. So it's like I've been talking to people lately and they say that we're awake. The problem when you're awake is that you've got more baggage and more responsibility, and you realise the more that you may be awake more than others, the more shit you've got to deal with and how much you aren't so awake. It's like as if, for me, I personally feel like one eye is like open just a millimetre. That's how much of awake I am. I'm realising that there's something going on. I'm experiencing something, but it's so far gone that, you know, we've got to take self-responsibility, but you can't just think, oh, we're awake, because there's a lot to what's going on. But from what I understand, my experience, the information I've got from my guides and the beings that I work with, is that there's going to be a bit of stuff go down. I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but it's like anything. If you want to change the course, change your productivity, change your health, change anything, you're going to have to make some changes. And sometimes you've got to do shit that you do not want to do. But you know it's going to be better if you do it. It's like you're sitting out the front of the house on the porch and you're looking at the lawn going, shit, that lawn's long. Well, you're going to mow the frigging thing. It's not going to happen by itself. So you've got to do some work. And not only do we have work we've got to do individually, we've got work as a collective we've got to do, which is the problem, because we've got to take ego out and accept that we're wrong sometimes and accept that we actually need to learn from one another. So I think we've got some hard times. I think, like you're saying, we've done enough shit to the earth where the mother star's going, all right, I'm going to have to whoop some ass. And at the same time, we're in a galactic plane with energetic changes going on. So this is where, you know, the male and female energies are lining up again. And this is where I think there's going to be a rocky road, but I don't think it's all for bad.
You know, I've seen, and I can't speak, you know, like I said, I didn't get this from my guys, but what I can see, I've seen a couple of timelines, you know, and one of them I think is one of our best chances if we get lucky and we have a type of visual divine intervention. And you know as well as I do, it only takes one of these mother ships, one of these bio satellites to come in our atmosphere and show itself. There doesn't have to be any beings getting off. They're already in contact with a lot of us now that most of us can't remember. That's why regression is so important. You know, I say these people said, I want to have contact, but nothing's ever happened. Why don't you go underneath serious regression and see if really nothing's ever happened to you? You don't understand what's happening on other frequencies that you're not consciously aware of currently. You know what I mean? That's I think divine intervention, and that's one of the things that Dane said that they saw. Was that during, at this point when the grids are down, people are about to war, and all of a sudden something comes into our atmosphere that caused everybody to put down their weapons and go home to their families.
Would it be a Vulcan scenario?
Yeah, but you know, by the same token, though, at the beginning of the kill shot, he said something that's going to come in our solar system and not hit Earth, but come so close, like closer than the moon, that it tilts our polar shift a little bit more, and that's when the solar flare comes in and penetrates our atmosphere.
Right, and so I've been watching like a double whammy.
Yeah, and a lot of things have been coming in out of nowhere and sailing right by us. You notice that?
Well,
and that
does worry me a little bit. Sorry for cutting, but you're exactly right. And in one of my books I wrote about a pole shift that Shiji was talking about, but then later on, once I was shown other timelines, I'm like, well, which friggin' timeline am I on? And she's like, well, now's you can decide that. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, like with the pole shift, what's going on with the sun and what is of concern to me, but at the same time, it's not so much as it once was, is that they were showing me how some of us stay human and go to the Pleiades and Orion, and then some of us turn into greys. At the same time, they showed me that from solar events and some of the stuff that the Illuminati or the, what's behind them was responsible for some of the humans turning into greys. So this is where the solar flares apparently happened. But then I was also shown that it's possible that what happened was beings came back, rectified what had happened so it doesn't happen. But this is the trippy part that I'm still trying to get my friggin' head around, and I can't, and they say it's because I think linear, and I've said it on the show before, because they said even though they've come back and they've fixed this, it still happens in another timeline. Yes. So right now, just an example, I could have somebody here, I shoot him, and then beings come back, stop me from doing it. In another timeline, that dude's still shot. Do you know what I mean? So it still happens. Do you having anything going on there?
No, only what I spoke of before is that I think that some of this has happened in the past.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean activity in the room. Have you got any activity?
Yeah. I've had
wispy shit going in and out the whole time. I was even touched a few times on the back, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got touched earlier just a little bit. It's funny you say that. But yeah, I think that, you know, like I talked before about who they called J-Rod. Mm-hmm. Who supposedly was with the Roswell crash, I believe, but he's a scientist that helped, or the gray scientist that helped back engineer some of the technology. And he said he was from the future, when there would be a cataclysm and that half the population had to go underground. And after centuries, they would develop, after generations, they develop insectoid features. All right.
This is some of the stuff that ties in with what I've been told.
And what's so interesting, like I said before, you know, when you look at things like some of the Hopi tribe here in America, the Hopis, they have a study about they have a religion about the Kachinas and things like that. Also have one about the ant people. And the ant people are supposedly from the past when there was a cataclysm and half of humanity had to go underground and they developed insectoid deals. But J-Rod said he's from the future. I told you my guides had told me we wouldn't be allowed to destroy Earth again in the free will zone. So this has happened before. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so when I'm viewing a lot of this, I don't know anymore, dealing with the time paradox, is it the future or the past? You know what I'm saying? Or is it just a cycle?
And sometimes I think we've got to be left out of the loop. Like you're saying, the dudes that you're in cahoots with were saying they're the Extragalactic Interdimensional Cooperative Alliance. So this is where a lot of dudes are a part of this. Like, I can't even count, really, the amount of beings that I'm interacting with. I used to be able to say, it would, you know, be around 20. But now I've got no friggin' idea because stuff is literally happening every day. People just think it's all about crafts. Now, now we've had wispy shit going in and out the whole time. Walking in the cities, buddy, a hell of a job for me walking in Melbourne here because I'm seeing stuff people aren't seeing everywhere. So this is where all this is going on all the time, and there's that many different beings from different vibrations phasing in and out and a part of it. So,
and you know, just to chime in on that, you know, we have to realize something else too, that the Earth, dimensionally speaking, is very much like the layers of an onion. And you know how many layers of appeal to get to the middle of an onion, the core of an onion? There's like thousands, right? I mean, that's the same way Earth is. And we're just only tuning in to one frequency, kind of, to keep all this solid. But, I mean, things are starting to change right now. Things are meshing in. People are seeing these orbs. They're seeing different dimensional beings. They're coming through these portals, these cracks that are emerging right now. So it, you know, it's, I think it's the way things are supposed to go during this shift, but I hope it goes positive. That makes sense. And we avert the natural disasters, the natural cataclysms.
That's all we can do. And all we can do is work on ourselves. You know, everyone's all busy about preaching whatever or getting petitions done, this and that. I really think as long as we just, we be the change we want to see in the world, and, you know, it may sound airy-fairy and people have heard it before, but literally if we change within, that's going to project outside of us, and then enough of us do it and we're on the same frequency, then as a collective, it's going to happen. So we can't be too worried about everyone else and, you know, just trying to be the best people that we can be and take it from there.
Yes, yes, very much so, very much so. And that's, you know, that's where, because right now, if we don't reach out to not, and that'll just mean extraterrestrials, we have to realize that here on Earth, we have resident angels here, that were resident here on Earth long before humanity. And you can look at things like the Urantia book, which I'm not a big fan of, especially when it comes to the cultural part of it. But when it talks about the organization of the universes and of the hierarchy, I think there needs to be close pay attention to that. You know what I mean? And they describe that a lot, what they call Urantia Seraphim, which are the ones that are resident here. But us as humanity, we have to start reaching out to these angels, to these beings that are here just beyond mortal vision, and starting to ask for assistance. Because if not, I think we're going down for the count. Well, and if I had children right now, which thank goodness I don't, but if I did, I'd be very worried about if my grandchildren would even have a world to grow up in. You know what I mean? And this is the free will zone. I know our beings won't step in and stop anything. They can't in the free will zone. They just won't allow us to destroy Earth. But that's not saying anything about us. But I think there's others here to help us rebuild if that happens in that way. But I'm hoping not.
Well, that's the thing. And a lot of people come to me and probably yourself asking us to ask our contacts, you know, from above for this and that. And this is why I do the guide work, and this is why I do the CE5 work, whatever people want to term it, is to friggin' give you a tool to do it yourself and meet them halfway. You know what I mean? It's like you, you meet them halfway. I meet them halfway. A lot of the experiences I know, eventually they come to a point where they meet these beings halfway, and that's when shit even gets trippier and better because you're playing a part.
We have to raise our vibration to meet them, yeah. And we don't understand that a lot, especially like these Alliance members, their vibration is so fast, it's painful for them even to come down a little bit to meet us. Mm. You know, and I didn't get that at first, but it's very painful. I mean, we're very dense here. And the things that go along with this, the great sex, you can go out and have some great brews or something, some good beer, but I mean, it's very, we're very disconnected from our multidimensional selves. In a way that it's scary. In fact, going into that, did you want to address maybe some of these questions that I actually got questions after our last interview.
Mate, but what you're saying is very interesting to a lot of people, and I'll be getting you back on again, and we can answer some more of the questions whether people hit you up or me up. You know, it's got to be done. I feel that what you say has to be out there, mate, and it's very bloody important in my opinion. So go into some of the questions, mate. Go into some of them, for sure.
One of them is, you know, sometimes it's people I know that walk up to me when they actually saw this. I say, you know, Barry, I've known you like 20 years. You know, are you saying you were abducted by aliens? Okay, I was And my reply to that is, I wasn't abducted. The next one that comes a lot is I've been asked, have you had any experiences with the reptilians or the greys?
What I call the reptilian dildo bangers.
Yeah, I said, no, sorry. No anal probes here, man. My experiences weren't like that. You know, my experiences weren't like that. I said, no, but I have to be honest as an experiencer, and then realizing when I went underneath all these regressions, how many contacts I'd had and was unaware of. I have not had any contacts with them to my knowledge. And none of my contact experiences, a lot of them have been physical, but they weren't negative, all right? And the beings themselves came with love first, and they announced who they were, what they were doing, so that wasn't what I dealt with there. The other one was the hybrid mother that we kind of described a little bit there. Was one of Mary's questions, actually. Another one that I've been asked about is the mist on the ship. The mist I spoke of was in the maturation chamber. The other rooms on these various ships don't seem to have the mist as thick in there, but in the oval tubes themselves, these tubes I described that are on these organic ships, is a mist in there also that I think is the environment for the beings, the light beings that are inside of there to exist in. So that's what that mist is more. The dizziness I speak of is due to the fact that I think the inside and outside of these crafts are in different dimensions. It creates a temporal aphasia. You're kind of just getting sick, basically, all the time when you're on board that. That's why I see they take so many people that are astral-wise and an energetic body. Because, I'm sorry, you're not going to survive very long on a trip to somewhere else on one of these ships.
And not just that, sometimes when they're trying to affect the physical realm, they'll take the body, do work on that, and then they'll take it astrally, and then they'll put it all together, and they'll tune it like a guitar string. Upgraded and resonating together and vibrate, you know, all that. Please go on.
Oh, sure. You know, the other one that came up, and even my own brother asked me about this one, the helmet. Remember the helmet? You got me talking about the helmet.
Yep.
They called it actually a synaptic helmet, all right? And what it was a helmet during my – this came out, and I could not remember this until it came out of the experience, but this ship appeared to be around us at one point. And it was like it was a part of – it's very odd. It's what James Gillian would call a pure conscious vehicle, mm-hmm. right? And that I think is correct, all right? But the problem of being in an environment like that and on a ship like that, which means not just is it symbiotic, but the ship itself is alive to that degree of sentientness, all right? But when this thing came down, it was lowered by what appeared to be – a tripod that a telescope would almost sit on, but it's upside down, it's coming down. It's too large for my head, all right? And when it comes on, though, it's obvious that it's giving me a frame of reference to just perceive things in this environment. You're in an environment that is dimensionally unstable, okay? So just them communicating with us, we need a frame of reference. It's even that much worse when you don't have one and things are moving around you. We don't even know how to perceive things like that. So that's what I'd say about the helmet. And I'll tie that into something else, because what that connects to is virtual reality technology, which I find it very interesting that our society just abandoned that in the late 90s, supposedly.
Everyone was looking forward to that, with Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat being like that, and some of the shooting games.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a game here in the mall where this in the 90s, but you put the helmet on and it's like you were like there shooting stuff, you know, like kind of what Sega is now to that degree. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there was a lady that I always kind of liked her research. Her name was Dr. Carlene Turner. And Dr. Turner talked a lot about the virtual technology that these grays were using to trick people to see loved ones and to get your genetics and things and do horrible things to you. And she wrote a couple of books. One of them was called Masquerading of Angels. And she died, and her husband died under very mysterious circumstances. Remember that?
Yeah.
Dr. Turner. But she talked about the virtual technology a lot. I could see how that could be used to deceive us, but the reason why these beings used it with me was so I would have a frame of perception, a frame of reference, so I could perceive what they're trying to show me and tell me. I mean, communication very hard when your quantum signatures are so different like that.
Anything else you got there to go on to?
No, that's most of them right there. Oh, sorry. The net, the scalar frequencies we talked about.
Yep.
So a couple people asked me about that. Scalar frequencies is something that Nikola Tesla discovered, similar to Project HEART. I think they're doing the same thing. I think that's actually... I think that's even tying into this net. Only thing I know about the net, and I was discovering it, there's several parts of it. Saturn, that we described, looks like a satellite. Mm-hmm. Going down to Cydonia on Mars, the dark side of our moon, and several monolithic structures here on Earth are creating this scalar frequency And when I go back to when I first started learning how to meditate and dealing with some of those, the gurus kept talking about we would go to the dark side of the moon when we slept, and that we also incarnated through the dark side of the moon when we come into the solar system before we're born here. And they called it the soul catcher on the dark side of the moon. But when I start listening to Richard Hoagland talking about the shard on the dark side that exists 60 miles off the surface, I think it's the same thing. He said it was
John Lear was talking about that, and also lately, I want to get a high-resolution picture, but the Chinese space team or whatever the hell they are with their probe thing, they actually got a there's a photo up on my website. If you type in China backside of the moon or something like that, you'll see a photo that the Chinese have taken of the backside of the friggin' moon with the Earth in the background, and there's like a dark spot. It looks high resolution, but I've just like seen the JPEG from, you know, whatever news site put it up. If somebody could get their hands on the friggin' original and pull it right up, it would be pretty interesting just to see any regular geometric patterns or shapes. Like Carl Sagan said, you could probably tell if any civilization's anywhere just by regular geometric patterns like squares, triangles, you know, like how you'd see apartments on Mars and all that sort of thing. So I thought I'd let you know if you didn't know that already or any of the viewers or listeners.
Excellent. You know, they also did, NASA did an experiment that they call the ringing of the moon.
Yes.
How they suspected it might even be hollow to a certain degree, and they were getting these odd seismic tremors from it or something like that. You know, I think all that very much connected. And I'll even mention that I found this interesting in this frequency we come through and that this net that nullifies all of our natural psychic abilities when we incarnate here. During your regression, the second one you posted, or maybe the third, I'm sorry, but you had mentioned the moon and that it was under, although it was a natural satellite, it was under artificial control. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned reptilian control. I found that very interesting.
I can't remember much of that until you mentioned it to me, and I still don't remember much of it,
All I can say is I don't have all the answers, but it's food for thought, definitely. Well, and I believe that it's more than just us incarnating here in the flesh and we can't remember anything. There's a reason for that, a reason why a lot of our natural abilities are just nullified. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And what I will say is I went over this lightly in my first book, The History of Man. Richard C. Hoagland spoke about on a show with John Lear, it was Structures on the Moon with George Norrie. And what I found very interesting is that with the ringing of the moon, how they sort of worked something out was once they put enough, I think, seismographs on the moon after enough missions, they could basically get a CAT scan of the moon to see that there was regular geometric objects or something a thousand miles underneath the moon's surface. So you've got that. When they landed, it ringed like a bell for over an hour. So something hollow, something artificial, who knows? And then the other thing on top of that is that apparently when they were trying to get samples of the moon dust or whatever, which a lot of it's just helium-3 up there anyway, which if you could bloody do fusion with it, you could think a teaspoon of that shit would run the Earth for a day with energy. But once they got enough underneath the moon's surface, they'd seen that the moon had been exposed to a different sun. So this was NASA's own data. Like Richard Hoagland says, the shit he gets, he can show anyone, and it's their own data. Mysteriously enough, though, was that after this information was published, NASA apparently turned off the seismographs, and it was only the cost of NASA's coffee for a year that it would have been to run those darn things anyway. So that's just a little bit of info that I have talked about before, but I thought was good enough to bring up now because it's stuff that a lot of people don't know that NASA came up with themselves.
Well, you know, it goes back to things that probably some people heard Zachariah Sitchin mention. I don't agree with all his work.
Yep.
But one of them that does tie into, or one of his views that does tie into ancient African knowledge, which is that of there being two moons here. Mm-hmm. And one of them being destroyed, but one of them was brought in here by the two star gods they talk about that brought the moon in here, and it had something different about it. They said it was artificial. And, you know, when I start hearing them testing the ringing of the moon, that's what's coming to my mind. It brings the whole hollow Earth theory thing in there. As I look at our solar system here, it looks like Earth has almost been torn apart in a weird way. You know what I mean? The way where it's shaped, it looks very odd. You know, and we know that this Earth, and I can remember it personally, used to have a firmament around it. Like many of the other planets in the solar system, what happened to that firmament? See, I remember one of those moon being brought down in an attempt to damage part of Mu. I don't know if it was a racial war or what it was exactly, but the Sons of Men, the Sons of God, the war. But it was an attempt to, and what happened is it broke up Mu and resulted in Lemuria and Atlantis. You know, those are broken up islands there. But, you know, that's what I'm seeing, some type of a tractor beam that brought that moon down or something. I think a lot more has happened here than what we realize. So I'm not saying that our moon is artificial, but it is odd.
Yeah. No, I agree. So this is just some stuff that people can do with what they want. Like anything, you'll find evidence against what we're saying as well. It's up to the people to do their own investigation and research. And like I tell anyone, don't believe what we've got to say, but just go with what resonates and what fits. You know, not that fits your preconceived notion, but what fits what you're looking at in terms of, all right, this is yay, this is nay, what weighs up? What fits? Is it more that this is bullshit, or is there something to it? You know, you've got to discern the information yourself and look through it. And to get to any truth, like, I'd rather not believe anything. I'd rather know. And because yes. With belief is why we're in a lot of trouble here. People believe the Bible. They believe other religions. And then we swear on them. And they've got no basis for it. Where, you know, why go to church? Why put your hand on something if you've got no experience with it? If it's just blind belief?
Well, you know, we're in a situation right now. If you look at the farms right now around the world, I mean, we've got a situation that, you know, we've got a nice sized ranch and you've got many, many cattle, and suddenly you have the cattle are becoming self-aware and sentient. That creates a mighty big problem for the ranchers, does it not?
Yeah.
And right now I think that, you know, I've said it before and people go, oh no, you're being all negative, whatever. But I'm telling you, everything I see on this earth, the ecosystems here on this earth are all predatorial, okay? And I believe when we get out of our body in the cosmos, in the universe, I believe it's predatorial, just like we see on this planet. And if you don't have that love frequency of the God with you, I think you're food. And I think you get out there, you get your luminosity ate on a little bit, you get scared back into another incarnation here on earth, or you've amassed so much karmic debt, you've got to stay here. And at that point, you know what I mean? You're food for these. I like the term that everyone's calling them now, archons. I think a lot of these things we're seeing that we're calling rods and the critters that exist on the astral, like James Trevor Constable, and people are getting pictures of right now. Even my friend Bill's got pictures of these things that are, they look like amoeba if you look in pond scum, right? You look in pond scum, you see what? Protozoa, amoeba, flagellum. A lot of these beings look like that. Rods look like flagellum, do they not? And I think they're archons, Pete. I think they're feeding on humanity, and they only appear that way to us.
When they're coming in frequency, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're popping in more now than ever because they're losing their way, and we're just their energy. That's,
yeah.
You know?
You know, even that thing I posted a while back, it's interesting, I got a few hits on it. The overlords of the UFO, it's from about 76.
They have
a thing on there they were calling the invisible flying predator. And it's what's doing the mutilation of the cattle. I don't think they were so far off on that. It may not have been Grays doing it, but you do have these predators that's on that level.
Yep.
You know, and it's to a point of where we're becoming aware enough that they're having like a final feast or something. That's what it seems like to me. I know that sounds negative, but I don't know what else to say. I mean, the fact that some of these beings can obviously incarnate here like you and I, and they can walk around down here and murder until their body quits running, and they go back there, you know, like I'd mentioned to friends about Jeffrey Dahmer when I did my thesis, I had to do it over serial killers. you know, he said something to that interview with Diane Sawyer just before he was killed in prison. He was very meek during all his interviews. He sit there and talk like that. And so he looked up, he said, they're asking if I'm crazy or schizophrenic. He said, I'm not schizophrenic. I'm not crazy. And why did I do it? I did it because it felt good. And if you let me out of here, I'll do it again and again. And it even shocked Diane Sawyer. She's looking at him like, whoa, you know what I mean? But that to me was little more than what we would call, quote unquote, a demon that is incarnated like you and I. It's saying what it does, what field of energy it likes, and what it wants to go back to when it dies. When people listen to what he was saying about taking those skulls to work, I was giving them power over these people, over their souls. That's very serious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, sorry, not to get morose, but I think we need to be aware of what a predatorial environment we live in for predators that are just beyond our mortal visions that we can't see. It's a mistake to think that in our concrete jungles we have no natural predators as humans.
Thank you for bringing that up, because we'll wrap it up in a minute. But like I say to people, I was one of those that used to think everything was love and light, and it just friggin' isn't. And you do not know both sides until you've experienced both sides. And people go, oh, you're going on about the negative of this and that. And it's like, no, I'd rather walk in the positive, but I think you would have your head up your ass if you think everything's love and light, because you need to at least just be aware. You need to be aware that things haven't got, like David Icke says, people go, the government wouldn't do this, they wouldn't do this. No, you friggin' wouldn't do it. They would. So this is where we need to just be aware and put the power back in again to us being what we want to be in the world, seeing what we want to see in the world. Just, you know, again, work on ourselves. That will project outside of ourselves. And when you do that, there will be roadblocks put up. There will be negative things try and get in your way. But that's more of a sign to go, hey, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, because these guys are trying to stop you on a stronger level like they'd never had before. I get tested. I know you get tested. Every now and then there'll be the psychic attacks or something negative trying to get in. And this is where if you aren't aware of it, you're going to get your ass whooped. If you're aware of it, you can do something about it. Sometimes ourself or our higher self can do something about it. Sometimes you could call in other beings and they can come in and do a bit of ass whooping just with their energetic field coming in. So you got to be aware of it.
You know, something that's coming in right now we should mention is, you know, here on Earth, we have our first cousins, is what I call them, that exist and I can determine about the fourth dimension. And I think a lot of them are not just deceased people, but they're inorganic beings, inorganic awareness that is part of the Earth matrix and existed here long before humanity. All right. And a lot of times we use things like Ouija boards, and you've got people doing these seances, they're Wiccans, and they're this and that. And they really don't know where that energy is going. And they're opening up a portal that is a knock on the door for our first cousins there. And I got news. A lot of our first cousins don't like us. A lot of them are predatorial, I believe. And it's real easy to come in, oh, I'm your aunt, I'm your grandma, and do this and that. And you know what I mean? I think people need to be very aware of what they're quote-unquote channeling, you know? And dealing with some of my new acquaintances now, I can see how many, a lot are dealing with these reptilians and these other beings that seem to have just a negative stigma attached to them. And I think that needs to be really evaluated before you invite one of these beings to take over your spirit and use your body. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to preach to nobody.
But that needs to be said. You know, you just can't think that everything's in line with you. And like James Gilliland says, and I agree with it, the mind you seek is the mind you connect with, but every now and then something will come in, and it's because you're doing what you're supposed to be, and they will try and knock you off track. It's just the way it is.
You know, we talked about awareness, the different sides of awareness. A lot of us don't have up a free enough awareness on the left side where death and sleep and subconscious lies to be aware that right in our conscious field of awareness all the time, there are different beings jumping into this planet, into our field of awareness, and we can't tell, we can't discern it. Sometimes we see things like the spirit, we use things like a moth or different totems that the spirit will use to communicate with us, but it's what we're turning it into seeing instead of seeing a ball of light jumping around us. You know, it's I think they call it cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Open mind and just be aware. That's the best way to go.
Yeah.
All righty, mate. Well, we'll wrap it up there. We've almost gone for 2 hours, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, an hour and 52 minutes, 53 minutes now. But look, thank you very much for coming on. I'll get you back on again soon. I'm sure there'll be a lot more questions and stuff pop up. It's always interesting. You open my mind up, and I learn so much when talking to you. So thanks a lot for being on the show, and I'll have a link up to your Facebook where people can connect with you.
Cool, I'll try to answer any questions when I'm on the computer. I don't mind answering questions at all. No one's bothering me at all, so yeah. I have no problem with that.
And if they do, just go and tell them where to go.
Yeah, well, they'll probably tell me first, the worst.
All good. Oh, I love you, mate, and thanks heaps for being on, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, man. It was nice.
Thank you. Bye, mate.
Cool. Take care, brother.